Yeah.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Comments from the Peanut Gallery podcast. We have a special guest today joining us via the Greater Than Detail Auto Detailing Service hotline here today. We have Carlos Valadez. Carlos, how you doing, my man?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, I'm doing much better now that we're past that like freak flash snowstorm that we had over the weekend here in Denver. Yo, I was used to the warmth already last week.
And you always get one snowstorm.
Yeah, I was not prepared for it.
You always get a heat wave right before.
Yep, exactly. And I was totally, it caught me by the blind side. I thought that we were in the clear and we were on the path towards summer. And it just, you know, it threw me for a loop personally.
Just got to remind you, it's Colorado. You never know what to expect.
exactly, my man. So, you know, coming into this, you've had a little bit of a matchup sort of shakeup a couple of times here coming into this Colorado Combat Club card. What do you have to share? Or what do you have to offer there for us? I saw that the last one got pulled from Tapology.
Yeah, so my last opponent was Francisco Beltran, real experienced guy from Wyoming. I knew he wasn't going to be down to fight. He hasn't fought in 3 years. So I was already expecting a switch up. And then I got told this weekend that Felix Cano was down. I said, hell yeah. And looks like I'm going to be fighting Felix Cano on June 17th at the Stampede.
Nice. Awesome. I mean, that's going to be, is there a reason why you're both stepping up in weight class, or, you know, just kind of the thought on the timeline, or what's that?
No. So it's at 35. I don't know.
At 35, yeah, he fought for the 25 title the last time. So because he's taking it on the short.
No, he fought at 35. Elijah Smith is the
you're right. Yeah. You're right. I got my title fights mixed up. They fought for the 25 fight on the same night as they fought for the 35 fought.
Joseph Hearn, Rocky Navo got down. Yeah.
Yes. I knew they're both champs, but you know, I got the weight class from and you had a big fight on that card too.
Yeah, I got TKO win over Alonzo Adams. Hey, but maybe after this fight, Felix will go down to flyweight. He doesn't seem like a very big guy, so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's still young too. He's got a lot of time to develop out there. But you know, you've had some time in the game. You've had some skin in the game. You've had a lot of tough opponents throughout your career already. Sure. You know, thus far. So, how do you feel that having some of these tough tests already as an amateur has helped prepare you for this moment?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I fought a black belt in judo. I fought a wrestler. I've traveled, fought people in their home state, ran for another family. I think it's prepared me well to go into the professional ranks next. You know, after I'm planning on for this fight to be my last amateur fight. So I'm trying to show professional skills and show that I'm ready to step up in level. And because this kid's pretty game. So we'll see what he has to say in there.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I feel like him bringing the fight isn't ever going to be a question. You know, so far, every time that he's fought in that Colorado Combat Club cage, he's brought action along with him. So I don't think that you'll have any trouble finding your Huckleberry on June 17th.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm excited for this one.
So let's kind of peel the clock back here for a second. What got you into fighting?
Honestly, I've been watching the UFC since probably like 08, 07, since I was like a boy. And then I've always gone to like street fights, middle school fights all the time. That's what I was known for, like back when I was a little kid. I've always loved the sport. I've always been competitive. And when I was 18, I started getting into some trouble here and there. My brother started training martial arts. He started doing jiu-jitsu, kickboxing. He was like, hey, man, you need to get in here. I tried it out, went to Halted Martial Arts. Within like 2 months, I knew I was going to do it for the rest of my life. I fixed my schedule with my job. I started training like crazy. I remember like the first 2-3 years, I was training like 2-3 times a day, every day. I was like so in love with it. And yeah, that was about 7 years ago. So I've been doing that for quite a bit now. I've had injuries, surgeries, layoffs, everything now.
Dealing through a pandemic, you know, trying to figure out when nobody had fights for a year and a half.
Yeah, I was gonna fight on like one of the last cards that got canceled right before COVID happened and had to wait out another year. So,
yeah, that's definitely a bummer. Now, with that being said, did you have any sort of background growing up as a kid in any sort of combat sport? Like, did you wrestle? Did you do anything like that growing up?
No, I played basketball, but I'm 5'9", so I didn't go anywhere, you know. Yeah, no, totally. No, I didn't. I liked boxing when I was in high school. I tried out a few gyms here and there, but that was it.
Nothing really until
I went to Houghton Martial Arts and then did everything from there: wrestling, jiu-jitsu, kickboxing, the jiu-jitsu tournaments, smokers, everything.
If you were to say within any of the individual disciplines, is there one in particular that you take a particular fancy to, or that, you know, like, hey, I know there's some guys, I mean, obviously in modern mixed martial arts, you have to be a well-rounded complete fighter, but there's some guys that they get a little bit of extra pep in their step when it's Muay Thai day and you're working in the clinch that day, or for someone it could be, you know, like if you're a jiu-jitsu guy, like, oh, you're down in my territory now, we're working leg locks or something like that. Is there something that jumps out to you?
Yeah, so for the longest I was known for a jiu-jitsu guy. I would grind all my training partners out. Even my first MMA fight, grind the guy out. And then I had a fight last year in May, and I had a banger fight with this kid in Mississippi. I broke my hand in the fight. And after that fight, I couldn't grip, you know, so I couldn't wrestle. So for about a couple weeks, I just focused on my striking. And then my next fight, I was facing a jiu-jitsu guy. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to focus on my striking, you know, my takedown defense, everything. So now I've gravitated more towards striking and the hands and getting that knockout, getting the fans excited, having a great fight. So more striking now than jiu-jitsu, but I used to be known for jiu-jitsu.
That's fair. Would you say that you think that it's just because of the time and the natural development of, you know, just rep rep?
Yeah. And you know, when you first start off as a fighter, you're like real nervous to throw hands. Actually, you start grappling right away. Everybody starts grabbing, and it takes time to actually develop the striking and the confidence to stay in the pocket and see shots and get hit and be comfortable getting hit. So I would also say the experience in the cage has gravitated myself towards that. Because wrestling is fucking, it gets you tired, man. You
know? Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And especially, yeah, you know, if you're going against someone who maybe you don't get that takedown on the first entry, or, you know, you have to chain some things together and you go through a little bit of a scramble, like, man, like that could definitely be a taxer on the energy tank.
Yeah, for sure. And especially in 3-minute rounds, if you're not going to get some good ground and pound or get a submission, you know, you might as well like get some damage in, get standing up, get something going, some action.
Definitely. And I think you mentioned a very good point as well, that it takes a little bit of time and takes some seasoning for you to be comfortable getting hit and still being able to hold your ground and work into effect your game plan. You know, I think that there's a lot of guys that you will see at the elimination ranks in the earlier stages of their amateur career. And sometimes for some guys, it might even appear early on in the pro career if they didn't ever really get hit too much as an amateur. But you know, that taking a shot here or there, or maybe you bumped heads and you split an eyebrow open or something, seeing your own blood, it takes a little bit of seasoning or a little bit of, I don't know what the right exact word is, but that sort of experience, I think, is a factor. You know, like having that already as an amateur helps you to be prepared to say, okay, if this happens again, I'm familiar with it. You know, I'm not in full on panic mode. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. I've been blessed. I've had tough guys. So when I go to the decision with them, a lot of the guys, you know, so they're not just folding right away. So they're giving me a fight back. So it's good to like see that you're not just going to hit a guy and they're going to fold right away. So you see that a lot of times, you know, with you fight a lower experienced guy, you hit the guy and you start showing up, boom, you get a finish. And then you get this false sense of security that, oh, I'm a knockout artist, you know, but maybe it's just the level of opponent you're fighting, you know?
Definitely. Now, is that really a major emphasis for you, that you want to make sure that you're taking these tough fights, especially right now? Because, I mean, I know that there's a fair amount of guys out there that are like, hey, like, this is the amateur ranks. Like, I'm not really getting paid outside of ticket sales or sponsorship. Like, do I really want to go through these wars right now when I'm not getting paid?
Yeah, well, the way I look at it, I mean, I train with the Elevation Fight Team, so those guys are killers. So the training I'm getting in there is already a higher level than whoever I'm going to be fighting at. And I'm trying to be a world champion. I'm trying to be in the UFC. And that's how you do it. You don't do it by fighting some guy you already know you can beat up, by boosting your confidence, whatever. I'm trying to fight the toughest guys, trying to test myself as a human, as a martial artist, and level up, you know, push yourself.
Certainly. Now, what does that look like for you in terms of a timeline, in terms of that goal of making it to the UFC? Is that something that you see like within a 3-year window, a 5-year window? What do you personally see, or what is your goal to make it to that benchmark?
No, definitely. I was telling my brother, I'm hoping by like the end of 2025, I'm trying to be in the UFC. I'm going to have this last amateur fight. Hopefully it goes my way. I show that I'm pro level. And then bang over my first pro fight out at the end of the year, and then just steamroll it from then on, you know, keep the train rolling, keep steamrolling it. I know it takes about, not everybody's different, you know, to get to the UFC, but I'm in the right path. I'm training with killers, training with UFC fighters. I'm seeing what it takes to be in the UFC. So that definitely I see myself there in the future.
Definitely. And just by proxy of training with the partners that you do, it's kind of that iron sharpens iron effect. You know, you are getting better through just training with that caliber of bantamweights right there in the room. And I mean, all the weight classes around there, you guys, obviously, yeah, you're one of the top teams in the world for a reason, but having a guy with a single digit next to his name, like the Corey Sandhagen in the room, that certainly has to help. I know that for our guys, you know, around in the flyweights, having someone like Brandon Roybal, who's a top 5 guy in the world, like that, his performance and his work ethic and his success is a driver for everybody else in the room. And I'm sure there's probably some similar effects over there with so many, you know, champions and highly ranked people over there with you guys.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it shows you that you're on the right path and you can do it. Cause at one point he was an amateur and he was 1-0 and whatever, you know, and if you keep working, stick with it, you know, good things will happen. Consistency, you know, it's key. So I believe in that.
Certainly. Now, you mentioned that you have the goal of having one more fight following this year if everything goes according to plan.
Yes, sir.
Now, is that just based off of, you know, just giving you some more time to prepare for the pros, or if something comes up and you have a couple of, you know, things that run together back to back, are you open to that as well?
Sure. Yeah. If I get the right matchup, obviously I'll take it. But since I'm going to be making that jump to the pro level, I want to get used to the 5-minute rounds, the elbows, all that little stuff, you know, and I want to make it the right way. I don't want to just jump the gun right away.
That's fair. Now, I'm not sure based off of the individual rules from some of the states that you fought in, especially like with Gulf Coast there, were you able to, did you have full rules there, or was it restrictions just like here?
Knees to the head, no elbows.
Knees to the head, no elbows.
Yeah, okay. I've never thrown an elbow, and I've never done 5 minutes, obviously. So that'll be the
right. Right. It's just tough to keep track of some of all these different states because, you know, we have some guys go out and fight for Midwest and Nebraska. Well,
New Mexico, you can get down elbows. So yeah, every state's different. I know that. Yeah.
What is your thoughts on that? You know, I find myself in a very double-edged sword type of position. On one hand, I understand that, you know, you don't want someone who, because let's be fair, there's some guys who have zero business being in there, especially some of these amateur debutants who, you know, they could go to some gym that might not have the greatest reputation or coach with the most experience, but he's going to throw that guy in there for that fight. And he might have only been training for a couple of months, and he goes in there against someone, you know, some savage like yourself who's putting in the work to be serious about this. And I mean, you could change his life in one night with the elbows and the knees and the 100%. Things that could happen under a full pro rule set. So I understand not having it there, but then I also look at it from the drawback of someone who is trying to progress through the amateur ranks and to become a serious professional. I do think that it's somewhat of a detriment that you don't have the opportunity to face some of those potential lessons before your record counts for real.
Yeah, I think leave the elbows to the pros. You don't want to be going to your IHOP job the next week with your fucking eyebrows split open, you know, from an elbow that got caused in like a closed guard, you know, not even a crazy position. I do think the elbows, you stick to pros, the knees to the head, I think that's all right. And then the heel hooks, tricky stuff, because a lot of guys can, you know, you can change their life and they don't even know what they're doing down there, you know. So, yeah, maybe the heel hooks and the elbows, keep them to the pros.
That's fair.
In my opinion.
That's fair. Yeah, and I don't know, like I say, like I just, there's some guys that I don't know, like, depending on the positions or the spots that they like to fight from, especially in the amateurs. I see a lot of guys who have a very wrestle heavy style, but they don't have to worry about that threat of the knees coming up the chute when they're in the amateur ranks. So then for some, it's a really big wake-up call once they become a pro and they have to start eating the knees right there, or they also haven't had to deal with taking damage off the break, kind of like the Chidi and Jokowani knockout from over the weekend. They haven't had to deal with that sort of adversity yet. So it's like, like I'm in the middle of a fight and I just got my cat pilled back in. What the fuck do I do now? Sort of thought. So I don't know. Like I see both sides of it, but I mean, I'm not going to argue against the safety or like the looking out for the better safety. Right.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, good thing that they keep it real at elevation now, so they'll shoot the knee right up the middle to shoot the bad takedown. So
yeah. Well, and I mean, especially when you're training with a bunch of pros, then and guys that are at a high level, you kind of circumvent that entire process. Whereas though, someone who's coming from, you know, not to belittle any sort of little like hole in the wall or mom and pop type of gym, but someplace where you maybe don't have legit training partners. You have a couple of guys who are hobbyists who are coming in when they're, you know, getting off of their shift at the warehouse and they're just coming in to let some frustration out before they go back to the wife and kids. They're not a high level guy who's going to really give you a true look. So you may not ever see that. You're going to see that when you're in a gym full of killers and guys who are doing this serious and for real. But those guys from gyms that are top echelon are going to be on the same cards, potentially also fighting someone who might be coming from, you know, Tony and Joe's backyard gym. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, 100%. So, yeah, I agree.
Just it's just always tough to where you draw the line in that respect. But so if we were to circle back to the card here in relation to your matchup, what is something that you would tell fans who are tuning in to watch you fight for the first time? What would they be able to come to expect?
They're going to expect action from the get. I don't touch and go. I go right straight for it. So they'll be in for a good fist fight. A good no points, then none of that. I'm trying to go for the finish. Trying to get action, get some highlights. So that's what they expect, some violence.
Certainly. Now, this is a question that my radio co-host, Josh Frem, likes to ask all of our hosts, or our guests, I should say, when we're on the radio each week. Is there any sort of music or shows or anything like that that is telling the tale for you right now during this camp? He says that for him, just to give you kind of the example, every single camp or every single fight that he's had throughout his career, all the stuff or all of his interests, like he can look back to in his mental, you know, memories and say like, this was the story of my life at that time. Is there anything that sticks out to you that way?
So right now I've been obsessed for a couple of months now with this guy named Jack Slack. I don't know if you're familiar with him. Nuh-uh. On YouTube, he breaks down fights like to the T. Like he breaks them down real technical, looks at tendencies, breaks down fighting to a different level. And every time I go to work, I have like a long drive to work. It's like 45 minutes. I listen to that all the time when I'm cooking breakfast. So I would say right now I'm like in a real, like, how would I describe it? Like a real, like, technical fighting. I don't know how to explain it. You know, I feel like Bruce Lee or something. Like I'm real technical about it right now. Like,
yeah it's all about it's fighting. Speaking right to now. your inner fighting nerd, right?
Yeah, for sure. Getting ready for a fight. I think that's what it is.
I'm a big Dominic Cruz commentary fan. I know that there's some people out there that say that he's a little bit too dry or too technical. I just say that you might just be too much of a common fan, or you might not understand all the nuances that he's really talking, because he is so intricate and detailed about some of this stuff. But I guess that's what I want to get out of it. You know, like I'm not as inclined to want the like the giddy laugh DC type of commentary.
Yeah, having a podcast while they're watching the fights and stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. I want someone like Dominic Cruz, who does have that elite level knowledge and fight IQ that can teach me something. Tell me something that I don't know.
Yeah, I used to really enjoy listening to Dan Hardy before they fired him. He used to break it down real good. He used to have his little breakdown on YouTube and stuff. And I really enjoyed him as well. And DC, even though he gets off track with his podcasting, people are fighting. When it comes down to the wrestling, he does get all technical, and you can see like his nerd hat come on about wrestling and stuff. So he gets down sometimes with it too.
He does. It's just too few and far between for me, for some of my liking. Like if that makes sense, and it's not to completely, yeah, if you team up with Joe, run the rip on him. Right, exactly. It's a complete buddy-buddy fest.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
whereas if you get someone like Dom, like I said, I love that dynamic of Dominic. And I like John Gooden when he's on the play-by-play too. He's not on outside of those European cards pretty much, or those cards overseas. But I don't know. I just like being able to learn something that I wouldn't have otherwise been able to figure out on my own. You know, like Dominic Cruz will say, like, okay, he takes this sidestep with the right hand, and then he's looking for a 1-2 shuffle, and then he's he just goes through the entire like breakdown of the tendency, like, wow, like you broke all that down, and now it makes sense in my mind.
Yeah, when I say, yeah, don't listen to the Bellator commentary, because Big John McCarthy just fucking comedy hour for him or something. So.
Yeah, I love me some Big John, but yeah, it's in terms of the actual live commentary, sometimes leaves some left to be desired there. And even
to cut you off. I was enjoying Robin Black last time when for the Comeback Club one. He's a real good guy too.
Yeah, Robin Black's incredible, especially when he does his breakdowns. I mean, he's very highly knowledgeable when it comes to technical nuances, especially with the physics. Like, that's what I liked hearing from him, or being able to pick his brain about that night, was him saying like, okay, like he stepped right here, and based off of the way that his foot was planted on the mat and the angle of his hip, he was able to create X torque to create Y angle and velocity. Like, just the way that he kept on talking was like, God, man, like all of this is just awesome. Like, I'm sitting here fascinated. Yeah. This is like my adult version of Bill Nye the Science Guy over here watching Robin Black. You might be too young to remember Bill Nye the Science Guy.
I know Bill Nye. Come on.
Gotcha. Okay. I didn't know if I aged myself too much with that.
No, not too much. Not too much. How old are you?
I'm 32.
So what was that? 89?
90. I was born in 90, graduated high school in 2008.
Okay. I'm 97.
Yep. So I was gonna say, like, sometimes these I make some references with some of my teammates and all that over here, and they're just like, look at me, like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, that small, that doesn't seem like it's that big of an age gap, but sometimes those little things, like, is just enough.
I was training with one of my buddies the other day, and he didn't know who fucking Kurt Angle was. Oh man.
Like, now that's tough, especially in fighting, and to know as much of a crossover like angle, and that Kurt Angle was going to join the UFC, but he failed his medicals.
I didn't know that.
Actually, when he was going to be a part of the cast for Tough 10, when they did the heavy same season that Schaub was on.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yep. Yeah, and that was going to be one of the big angles. They were ready to have such heavy hitters and personalities like Kimbo, in addition to guys like Kurt Angle. But there was, I don't know if it was related to his neck and the broken neck injuries and whatnot, or if it was something else. But whatever it was at that time, Kurt Angle couldn't pass the medicals to be a part of Tough. And so that was basically, that put a cap on his run at trying to cross over into MMA.
Yeah, I didn't know that one. Yeah, my buddy, you don't know who Kurt Angle is? And he's like, no, I watch real wrestling. I'm like, motherfucker, he's an Olympic gold medalist. What?
Yeah, like, you played yourself on that one.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. But we've covered a lot of things here so far. Is there anything that we haven't hit on, or any training partners, management, anybody that you want to throw a shout out to?
No, not right now. My brother, Rich Marquecho, he's been handling all my fight stuff, my training camp. Give a shout out to him. That's all I want to shout out.
Awesome. And is there any place that have they made the ticket link live for you yet? Do you have a promo code?
No. So we have tickets in hand. I don't know how
tickets in hand.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, for everybody that's listening out there, and you want to give my man the support, make sure that you reach out to him. And where can they follow you on social media to hit you up for those tickets?
Yeah. So my IG, my Instagram is CarlosValadez_, or you can just find me on Facebook. My full name, Carlos Valadez.
Absolutely. And people, I know I tell this to you every time that we talk to a fighter who is in camp and getting ready to go, but make sure that you buy tickets from the fighters. They get commission for these. This is a big part, especially for these guys as amateurs. This is how they get paid. This is also how they're able to leverage some future value once it comes time to being a pro and booked on that main card position. So make sure that you support them out there. This is the Comments from the Peanut Gallery podcast. We are talking to Carlos Valadez on the Greater Than Detail hotline. Make sure that you check him out on June 17th at the Stampede in Aurora, and we will see you next time.
Thank you so much for watching. Please hit that like, share, and subscribe button. That helps us continue to produce this original MMA content and bring it for you every single week. Tune in to the MMA Plug presented by DenverSportsBetting.com on 98.1 FM, Mile High Sports Radio on Wednesday nights from 6 to 7 p.m.
or live stream at DenverSportsBetting.com/radio.